welcome to Vision Scope, a program designed to educate and inform on matters relating to disabilities. My name is Wilbert Williams. We have a special guest. He is Dr. Andre Bennett. He's also a minister of religion. But you know what? The best person to introduce themselves, you know, is the guest, you know. We can't do it as well as the guest can. So, Dr. Bennett, welcome.
Thank you, man. Thank you very much for having me.
Do you want to be called Dr. Bennett or Reverend Bennett? What would you prefer?
You know, it's completely up to you what you call me once you don't call me dog.
we're going to do it like in the streets of New York. What's up, dog?
But you know.
We're going to do that.
In some instances, dogs are highly honored, you know.
Right. No, I want.
Well, tell you this right now, as a religious man as well, too. You turn DOG and turn it around, you get GOD.
There you go. I once preached a sermon and I said, you know, people don't like being called dog unless you're calling them the big dog or the top dog.
Yes.
Andre's good, Reverend Andre's good, Dr. Bennett is good. It's whatever you call me, it's fine.
Okay. Good to have you, man.
It's good to join with both of you.
Yes. We have been looking forward to this discussion, and because we have a lot to learn from you, and you know, we want to be able to reach as many people as we can. And this is one way of doing it.
And this is a powerful way of doing it. Right now, we have to use all the media platforms that we have to amplify the message. So thank you.
Yes. And, you know, we want to start off, as always, by asking, who is Andre Bennett?
In a nutshell, the simplest response is, you know, just a humble little brother trying to do his thing here in Massachusetts. I am a father, I'm a son, I'm a grandfather. That's my most illustrious accomplishment up to this point. Being a grandfather of one, my little 2-year-old grandson Rashad, he's my world. I'm a brother, I'm an uncle. And those are, you know, just the things that keep me grounded and humble in the community and more forward facing. I serve as the pastor of youth and young adults at a church in Massachusetts, Zion Baptist Church in Lynn, Massachusetts. And I know, especially Jamaicans, when we hear Zion, we think revival church. It is not a revival church at all, yes, though I wish it was some days. It's a Baptist church. I serve as the president of the board of directors for an organization called ECHO, which is the Essex County Community Organization. And ECHO is a 75,000 plus member organization that serves. It's a huge organization that serves all the town within the Essex, cities and town within the Essex County of Massachusetts. And what we do, we are a grassroots organization. So we advocate for everyday things, social and racial and immigration and housing and all of those justices that you can think of. We advocate for those. And I lead that organization. I've been the president of that organization now going on my fourth year, which is my second term. I was just recently reelected unanimously.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you very much. And that provides me serving that organization since 2011 and having risen through the ranks has provided me with just an amazing opportunity to sit in conversations and in spaces with, the highest echelon of our society that are dictating laws and making laws and determining what impacts the lives of our people. And so I consider myself, just through that work, a servant of the people. Outside of that, my professional life, I serve as the executive director of a mental health institution, or agency rather. And in a nutshell,
that's your full-time job, executive director.
I'll say this. That is the job that pays the bills.
One of those.
Right? My full-time job is that of community advocacy. I specifically, kind of arrange my life in such a way that everything that I do, from serving in the ministry to serving as the executive director of a mental health agency, puts me in a position where I serve as a chief advocate for our community, and particularly for those who their voices are not as loud or as strong or even as visible as others.
I hope you won't mind me asking you this question, but are you Jamaican?
I am Jamaican through and through.
You sound every inch of it.
I am Jamaican. I came here, my family and I came here almost 15 years ago. Well, my wife came here a year and a half before me and the kids did. And so we came, my son and I came in 2009, and the older kids came in 2010.
What was the transition like moving from Jamaica to United States?
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about because people don't understand.
It's truly painful, and you're right. People do not understand. America is very, very, very vastly different than Jamaica in so many ways, good and bad. Firstly, I came here in April. And if you know anything about the seasons, April is kind of like on the tail end of, it's in the middle of winter. Let me say that. It should be on the tail end of winter, but it's in the middle of winter.
Officially, it's on the tail end.
Officially, it's on the tail end, but it feels,
anything can happen.
It usually feels like it's in the dead of winter.
Well, yeah, certainly do, because April, May, all the time, still quite cold. We're supposed to be springtime, right? But it's still cold.
It's frigid. And since I came here in 2009, every year, either in April or May, we get a blizzard every single year, which every year they say it's historic because it's worse than the year before. But every year we get a blizzard, either in April or May. So it feels like, it still feels like the dead of winter. But, so I came here, I landed directly in Massachusetts. Faye was here in Massachusetts, and so I came directly here wearing nothing. But, we cool. We're from Jamaica, so we cool. I had on a nice little, cakey pants and my little jacket because I thought I was too cool for school. Mm-hmm. And I stepped off that plane in Boston, Massachusetts, and I felt a million daggers went through my body with that cold. Yeah. So that was the first thing that, whoa, I am not in Jamaica. And then, after getting here on a visa that you're not allowed to work, you must be in school, you must do community volunteer services, kids are raised differently. It's a huge transition to the point where I got physically ill. My body started breaking out. The climate was too strong on my skin. I started coming down with chronic fatigue syndrome because I don't know anybody. I don't know the area. I can't move around. I don't have a job. Now I'm coming from a situation where I was working at one of the most successful credit unions at the time back home. Plus, I was also serving JTA because I'm a teacher by trade. So I had things going on for me, and then I'm in a situation where I can't work. My wife is the only one that's working. We have four kids. We have two mortgages. We have rent. Like the transition is remarkable. And then I'm in a white man's country. I'm a black man. I'm 6'2". I have an accent. You stand out. Yes, and I'm in white Massachusetts. I'm in the suburb of Massachusetts. I walk over to the mall with my kid, and there are three people walking behind me in the stores. You know, I'm walking down to the library. Police cars are pulling up beside me, asking me if I'm okay. And they're not asking me if I'm okay because they're checking on me. They're asking me if I'm okay because I look strange.
They're curious.
Right?
Curiosity. So
all of those things take a dramatic impact on your mental and your emotional well-being. On top of the other things that you're dealing with personally, because listen, it don't matter how great your relationship is, it doesn't matter how wonderful your family life is. When there's one paycheck coming in the house, for the first few months, it feels okay. But you know, after month three or four,
it takes its toll.
It starts taking its toll. Yeah. And then there's that conversation that needs to be had. So, you know, America is great for all the opportunities that it provides that a lot of other countries, including our own Jamaica, doesn't provide. But the first 5 to 7 years of just trying to assimilate in this country, for me, are the most challenging of anything I've ever experienced in my life.
Andre, tell me, what led you then to decide to go into you're a trained teacher, eh?
I am a trained teacher.
Trained teacher. What led you to decide to go to focus on mental health?
That's a really good question. So my story is pretty unique, I think. My eldest sibling, a brother, lives back home. He was born with epilepsy and moderate mental retardation. But growing up in Jamaica, we didn't quite know how to frame those things.
Even how to simply acknowledge
those things. Right? Yes. And so we know that our brother was different. Our brother was treated differently. He acted differently. And we were sometimes told, you know, especially when he's acting up and he's put away in the back room for, and this is life, like... My brother was put away in the back room sometimes for weeks on end, and we were told if he's asked for, then you know there's a story that the family gives as to where he is. There was something ever since then that told me that this isn't necessarily correct. This isn't right. Like there has to be something that we can do. Anyway, fast forward, I got into school, I got into college, I, you know, worked as a teacher, I left, I went to UWE, I earned, you know, a degree in banking and financing, and I started serving at GSB and, you know, kind of built my life. I came here and my wife was serving with an organization that specializes in developmental and intellectual disabilities. Now, the quickest way to get my visa status change is to get an agency to sponsor me a job. And that was one of the easiest jobs for international people to get into, primarily because it's group homework, it's direct service. Americans then didn't necessarily want that job because it means that you are physically caring for these individuals, and it takes into consideration everything, cleaning poop, you know, going out with them in the community. So Americans didn't necessarily want those jobs, so they would recruit international people to do those jobs. So I got a scholarship to go to one of the local community colleges, and I did a certification program there. And it was during that time I discovered that I liked the academic aspect of it. I knew how to identify the physical challenges and signs, but I didn't have the academic credentials. And so I started focusing on psychology, developmental psychology, until I got to UMass Lowell. I branched off into community and social psych, and then into applied behavior analysis. But primarily, because I wanted to find a way to serve the most important person to me that I've come across in my lifetime with mental health issue, and that was my eldest brother.
Andre, what exactly do you mean by mental health?
Sure. That's a really great question, because a lot of people don't necessarily understand. When you hear mental health, you think of, you know, somebody being crazy. And that's the thing that people run with. But
we all have a mental side that we need to take care of.
We all, every single one of us is impacted. So mental health includes our emotional, psychological, and social well-being. That's what our mental health includes. It affects how we think. It affects how we feel. It affects how we act. And it helps us determine how we handle stressors relating to our work and the choices that we make, others, and the people that are in our life. So it's a wide range of just our holistic self.
Just to put things into perspective, would you say that man is made up really of three distinct components?
Absolutely.
Mental, physical, and spiritual?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I believe that wholeheartedly. And, you know, part of the mental and the physical is the social. So it's three, but it's 3A. You know what I mean?
Yes, yes. Yes. How do you then, as one who is a minister of religion, how do you cope with separation between spiritual and mental? Because there is a school of, let me tell you where I'm going. There's a school of thought which seemed to express the view that mental problems are tied to spiritual problems, which to a certain extent that might be so, but aren't there distinct solutions, separate solutions?
Absolutely. And I will say this before I attempt to answer that. I always, make the disclaimer. I don't come to any conversation claiming that whatever I believe, whatever my hypothesis or theory is the absolute of whatever the conversation is. Tied to the fact that a lot of us believe that, you know, the mental is tied to the physical, which I certainly believe that. I'm from Jamaica, where we're deeply conservative and we believe in the Holy Spirit and we believe in God and we believe in stuff like that. And a lot of times we see mental health issues and we think for a minute that it is spiritual issues. Now, there are the distinct difference is how we are able to cope with things that are happening in our lives. Now, let me make a breakdown, a very simple and even maybe a little asinine example. You go into church, the Spirit of the Lord is upon you, you feel good, you run around, you speak in tongues, you fall, you roll over. That is a spiritual thing. Mm-hmm. But if my daily, everyday life looks like one where I cannot pull myself out of bed, and when I do pull myself out of bed, I can't go more than 2 hours without feeling exhausted or bothered or hearing stuff, or I'm off, my bearings are off. That's a mental health issue. That is no longer a spiritual issue. And we can go into, as a Christian, as a man of God, as a servant of a servant of the cloth, we can go into, you know, the spiritual attacks different from spiritual issues, because there are spiritual attacks that are far different from spiritual issues. And mental health issue is completely different from spiritual attacks and spiritual issues.
Would you say that those individuals who you just described are demotivated? I don't want to say mentally weak, but there's a level of demotivation why they lose energy to do anything at all during the rest of the day.
It can be any number of things. I'll share with you. You asked earlier how the transition was for me. Now, one of the things, you know, in the Black community, we kind of frown upon mental health care. You know, we don't do therapy and stuff.
We put a stigma on it.
There's a stigma on that. Mm-hmm. In the Caribbean, it's even worse. Coming from Jamaica, it is even worse. But when I came here about 6 months in, I started having struggles. Now, I'm someone, and if you talk to my wife or my kids, my family, they'll let you know. I'm someone, I get up, I clean my house, I make the bed, I do the laundry, I cook, I found myself about 6 months in, couldn't shower without sitting in the tub because I would be physically exhausted. I'm not doing anything. I don't have a job. Faye's at work. Faye does work. I stay home, take care of Shay, take care of the house, make Faye's dinner, drive it to work, give it to her. But I could not physically go more than 2-3 hours without feeling burnt out, completely burnt out. I'm making the bed and I have to pause. And so Faye got concerned and like, we need to go see the doctor. At the time, she took me to my primary care physician. And that's when I was first diagnosed with what is called chronic fatigue syndrome. It is a mental health issue because here I am. I came from an environment where I was actively working. I was actively involved in church. I was actively involved in my community. I had my family around me. I had my sisters, my nieces, my nephews. I had a community of life and support around me. And now I'm into a system where I'm watching my wife work every single day. I'm not able to contribute to the bills of the house. It starts taking a toll on you mentally, and that starts affecting your physical being. Doctor was able quickly to put me on some meds, and within 3 months, 90 days dosage, within 3 months, I was like brand new.
Would you say that if you were not properly diagnosed, even if you were treating the physical aspect of the fatigue,
mm-hmm.
you still wouldn't get a cure?
Yeah, there would be no cure, but even worse than that, I would sink deeper and deeper into what is called clinical depression. That's what would have happened. And that's where, if clinical depression isn't treated, it turns into psychosis, where people become psychotic. So it's a steady and slow progression that if it's not tended to, it could be the end result of it will lead to psychosis.
All right. Talk to me now about the management of our mental health. How do we manage the mental side of our life? Some of us are working, we get up, we have a lifestyle, we go through life. But how do we manage, or should we manage our mental health?
The first thing, and I want to speak to, you know, my brothers and sisters that are home and are hearing. The first thing we need to do is pay attention to our bodies. Like, a brother is not lazy. A woman is not lazy if she decides to take a day and do nothing. If it's a hardworking man or woman and he decides, I'm taking today to do nothing. Because your body is not programmed to keep going. Your body needs to rest. It needs to recuperate. Otherwise, it starts affecting everything. So the first thing is pay attention. When your body says stop, stop. Secondly, we need to make sure at all times, every juncture of the way, we are getting the proper medical.
Before you go to that second point, I want to stay with the rest a little bit. Because some people don't understand what we mean by rest. Rest, you wouldn't consider rest to be total inactivity.
No, if that's not rest is.
It might be changing what you do on a regular
basis. What you do. Rest is stepping away from physical labor that demand psychological output as well. If you are someone who, I don't know, you work, you're a principal, for lack of a better example. Mm-hmm. You're always in the office, you're doing administrative stuff. You might a lot. That's not physical labor, but your mind mentally is going. Mm-hmm. Rest for you Rest for you might mean stepping away from that for a day or two and doing something that recuperates and re-stimulates your brain. So it might be that you and your family go on a little trip, or you go on a hiking here or there, or you connect with your friends and you play some card games, but stepping away from the thing that
from the routine
that demands that
your you know, without even cutting you short, Dr. Bennett and Wise Willie, you know, one of the things I've always observed, you see, interested in sometimes not only physical, but mentally, especially if you did it in a classroom or on any job, matter of fact, if the situation could be quite stressful sometime. And, you know, rest is quite important. Yes, I totally agree with that. sometimes the same very thing that you once loved, if you don't step away, you may end up hating it.
Absolutely. That thing that was a hobby for you, that thing that brought you joy, has now become a chore. So now it is even pulling on you, not just physically, but now your spiritual being comes into play, because it's taking away from your spiritual being as well as your mental and psychological.
So we end up being burnt out.
So you end up being completely burnt out. And if, again, you're not paying attention to yourself, your balances, you're off your balances, and you start distancing yourself, or you get very snappy, you get very aggravated, you become tired, you no longer, there's lack of interest, there's lack of care for yourself, and it just becomes a very slippery slope.
I'm sorry, because I did disturb your trend of thought a little bit, but I wanted us to focus on that aspect of rest, because I think many of us don't understand what we mean by rest.
And the other thing, Wise Willie, thank you, is that, you know, we don't. I've learned that our culture, we're taught to work until we can't work no more.
You're not supposed to sit down.
We don't realize that work is supposed to be something that sustains your life, your way of life. Mm-hmm. Work is not something that should become your way of life. It's not something that should determine or define your way of life. So here's the thing. You work 8 hours per day because you need your bills paid. Yes. You need to make sure you can provide for your family. Mm-hmm. There are still, after 8 hours, there are still, what, 16 hours left?
16 hours that you must deal with.
That you have to deal with. But we are programmed that you are supposed to work 24 hours per day. Otherwise, you are lazy and you're no good. That is not correct. It wasn't, you know, you can eat the meat and spit out the bone. Some of the things that we learned from, you know, our older generation and those who came before us, isn't necessarily the correct things. They just passed on to us what was passed on to them. You're supposed to work to sustain your life, not that your life is supposed to sustain your work.
Would you say that that's one of the things that Bob Marley meant when he talked about mental slavery?
Emancipate yourself from mental slavery.
It's part of the process.
It absolutely is. And it is okay to feel different. It's okay. I can't say this enough. It's okay to feel different and to verbalize that, because that is the first step in getting the help that you need, is to acknowledge that something is off, and to admit that you need to deal with that thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If you find that you're doing things, you're going, and if you take an hour for yourself, if you have an hour lunch break, and you're sitting down during that hour, thinking about the next thing that you have to go do, something is off. You should be okay with taking an hour for yourself. Here's where I've gotten to in my life, because I've had burnt out so many times over my lifetime. I'm now at a point where 15 to 20 minutes of each day, nobody bothers me. I love music. I love singing. I love dancing. So I'm going to turn my music up, and I'm just going to, if I'm at work, enjoy yourself. I lock myself in my office. If I'm at work, if I'm at the church, I lock myself in the office. And if I'm on the road, I'm in my car and my music is blasting, and I'm just enjoying my time, because I deserve the best of me, just like everything else that I give the best of me.
All right, so we could stay with rest, but let's move on because you were going to touch on aspect number two.
So the in addressing or dealing with our mental health, first thing is rest. We must rest. The second thing is ensure that you are again staying on top of your health. Stay on top. If something doesn't feel right, your body knows this. Mm-hmm. If something,
and it tells you.
You have to listen to your body. Here's one of the things that I tell my clients all the time: you are the most important person you know. And if you're not at your best self, your fullest, your freshest, and your finest self, you can't be anything to anyone else. Mm-hmm. So listen to your body. Take the time, go see your doctor, make sure you get your regular routine checkups and tell your doctor everything that is going off. If, you know, pardon my French, to your listeners, but if your pee looks a little darker than it usually looks, let your doctor know because something is going on in your body. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All of this is mental health. So listen, so get your rest, listen to your body. And the third and one of the most important aspect for me is have someone that is not a friend, is not a family member, is not a pastor, but someone that you can completely talk to. Mm-hmm. Someone who earns your confidence and maintains your confidence, and you can sit and talk with that person. We place such little value on being able to unburden ourselves. Listen, we carry, especially us Black men, we carry so much internally.
And that is why we end up with high blood pressure.
Oh, yes. And you're talking to someone who currently takes medication for high blood pressure. And so I had to learn a lot of these things along the way. Mm-hmm. It is important, whether you want to call it therapy, whether you want to call it a chat, whether you want to call it a good old wise Willie that I sit and chat, whatever mm-hmm. you want to call it, find someone mm-hmm. that you can talk to and unburden yourself with. Mm-hmm. I'm learning myself the value in these things because we are not, again, our system is not programmed to hold all the things that we try to hold on a daily basis.
True, true. What then? Some of us are not good at interpreting how we feel.
Mm-hmm.
How can we get around this? Because you did indicate that, look, if something is going wrong, mm-hmm. you need to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
It might be somebody medical, it might be somebody in the psychiatric or psychological aspect of life. But how do you get people to move beyond that closed door kind of approach?
Yeah.
And become more open?
It's tough, right? Because a lot of it is a lot of it is cultural. And when I say cultural, I'm not speaking about the universal culture that we have. I'm speaking about how we are as individuals, how we mm-hmm. are raised, how we bring ourselves up. A lot of it is cultural. But this is what I learned. It was the hardest thing for me. I've been a minister since I was 18 years old. It was the hard. I thought, you know, I'm the last of five children, the only boy for my mom, who's a single mom. And I was told at 4 years old when my mom and my dad broke up that my responsibility is to take care of the house. Mm-hmm. It is my responsibility to make sure everybody's okay. And so up to 18, 19, 20, to 30 years old, the hardest thing for me to do was to unburden myself to others because it made me feel weak. Mm-hmm. It made me feel like I am failing at
You're not the man in charge anymore.
Not the man in charge. I'm failing at one of my primary duties. And thank God for Faye and the kind of person that Faye is, because Faye was one of the first people who helped me identify that, Dre, sometimes you just need to let it go. And it starts with something as simple as noticing that you have a headache lasting for 2 days. Why is my head hurting? When did this headache start? What was I doing when the headache started? It's that simple. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. I haven't eaten or I haven't enjoyed eating for the last 3 days. What was the last thing I ate? what happened directly before I had that? What happened while I was having that? And that will help you start like checking in with yourself. And once you get to that little space of, okay, you know, boy, Willie, you know, say, me sit down yesterday and my head just start hurt me. Me that think about, I don't know, me that think about, you know, the woman and the pin of them and boy, is a lot of stress. That is just that will open a door for you that is unbelievably helpful for you to just be able again to start checking in with yourself. And the more you do that is the more comfortable you become at doing that.
Mm-hmm. There is a school of thought where the approach is just pray about it. Are you familiar with that?
I'm from Jamaica. This is what we do. We pray about it and drink some ginger tea. I have a headache. Come drink some ginger tea or some Cersei tea. Are you good? Yeah. No. No. Yes, the good book tells us that sometimes go it not but by fasting and prayer. Mm-hmm. But understand, if the book is to be believed and the story of Jesus Christ is to be believed, when Jesus was on the boat with his disciples, and this is the pastor in me now, when Jesus was on the boat mm-hmm. with his disciples and the wind started raging, mm-hmm. his disciples went to seek him out. He was on the boat and the boat was about to be capsized. Where did they find Jesus? I do.
Must sleep.
If Jesus can sleep, why we can't sleep?
Exactly.
Right? The simple thing in that, Jesus could be around here praying, but Jesus was sleeping. Praying alone isn't the answer for everything.
But isn't that telling you that he was asleep because he was in control?
The man understood that even he, the King of Kings, needed time to recruit. Mm-hmm. So, yes, pray about it and pray about some things, but prayer without work is dead.
Yes.
Prayer without work is dead. So while you're praying, make sure you're also putting in the work to take care of yourself. We cannot use the church and God and the Holy Spirit and Jesus to deal with the mental health issues that we have. We seek wisdom and guidance through our faith and our religion, but God has equipped people like myself and Dr. Blake and other people in the world that are expert in certain fields to help us deal with the physical and the mental things that are happening to us. So while you're praying, make sure you're also putting in the work. So you go, you talk to a friend and your friend tell you what to do and you do what your friend tell you to do. And then you pray, you say, God, I did my part. Now I want you to do your part.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. But you have to do something.
Well, you have to do something. You can't just pray about it because you know, how many people, and the church folk might get mad at me for this, but that's all right. How many people die praying for life? There's a story that I heard and I shared with my congregation before. There was a flooding and there was an announcement over the loud screen that, you know, people should go seek shelter. And this man said, no, I'm praying about it. God is going to deliver me. And a bus came and said, we're evacuating the street. He said, no, y'all going to leave me. God is going to save me. And he keeps going. And he had to go to the second floor and a boat came by and he had to go on the third floor and plane came by and he had to go in the top of the tree and a helicopter. In each of the juncture, he said to them, God will deliver me. Well, finally he drowned and he made it to heaven and he said, God, why didn't you deliver me? God said, how was I supposed to? I sent you a bus, I sent you a boat, I sent you a plane, I sent you a helicopter, and you didn't do anything.
He refused all of them.
Refused all of it. The point being, it's a silly story, but the point being, while you're praying, do the practical things that you need to do to ensure that you are on top of your game mentally. Because again, even if you are the most ardent child and servant of God, if you are not mentally well, you're of no spiritual use.
Andre, we're almost out of time because I know you're working on a tight schedule.
Yes, sir. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, but you can't leave without taking a couple of minutes and motivating our audience because we have listeners in over 60 countries.
Wow.
And a lot of them are blind or disabled. But we want you to motivate people, not people with a disability, but people.
Yes.
Because it what you are saying applies to everybody. Mental health difficulties can affect each and every one of us.
Yes.
So what would you say to them?
I would say what I continue. My message is simple. Please take care of yourself. Listen to your body. It doesn't matter what state or stage you are in life. I say this all the time. Mental health is the only illness, and it is a condition. It's an illness. And it doesn't mean that you're mad or you're crazy, but mental health is the only illness that is waitlisted. If someone breaks their hand and they go to the hospital, they're seen within 2 hours, patch that hand. If someone gets a cut and they go to the ER, they're seen, they get stitched up. Your mental health is just as important. Take time for you. Enjoy. If you're working, you might not be able to get on a plane and go on a vacation somewhere or get on a ship and take a cruise somewhere, but take yourself out. Go step away from the job for a day. Make sure you take your days off. Make sure you're listening to your body. Find someone who is not an immediate family member or someone within your immediate circle that you can bear yourself completely to, and listen to the things and the signs that your body gives you. You have one single body, one single life. And I say this to every person. You are the most important person you know. I don't care how much money a person has, how important they are, how famous they are. Nobody is as important to you as you are or as you should be. So make sure you treat you as the VIP that you are.
You know, that's very important and very timely. And Andre, I want to say a big thank you for coming in and sharing with us. And guess what? We have a surprise for you.
What is that?
You are no longer a stranger to UVC Radio.
So, thank you.
You know, and we would like to count on you as part of the UVC expertise that we can draw on from time to time.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we look forward to interacting with you in the future and to build relationships with both you and Dr. Blake.
Wonderful. And Wise Willie King Rocco, I say this, I would love to continue this conversation. So if you all ever feel like it's time for us to have part two of this conversation, part three, part four, I'm very happy.
Man, we need to have a part two on this one, definitely, because, you know, when mental illnesses go so long, without even, before even letting you go quickly, you know, one of the things, Willie, I've seen, matter of fact, I have a neighbor, and sometime, he was still like 2-3 o'clock in the morning, this guy was just like scream. You know, sometimes a lot of people would say maybe some demonic thing. But, you know, one of the things I would say, a lot of people don't understand how mental illness is bad. It's not necessarily has to be a spiritual thing, but mental illness is very serious.
It is very serious, and it affects, especially in this COVID world that we're living in. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen, and I do have to run shortly, but we haven't seen the full mental effects that COVID will have on our communities. And we're not going to really get a full picture
of it. It's going to take years.
It's going to take at least another 5 to 7 years for us to get a full picture or an accurate picture of it. Mental health is absolutely important at this point. And I say, let's destigmatize it. I don't care who you are, where you are, what gender, what color, what race you are. We all have one common thread, and that is our mental state. And we have to ensure that we're on top of our game at all times. So let's do what we need to do to take care of ourselves, and let's keep the conversation going.
Yes, man. Thank you ever so much. We want to wish you all the best for the future, and look forward to talking with you soon.
If you have any questions or comments regarding this program, please address them to norwill2@gmail.com. That is norwill2@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Have a happy and productive week. That's it for today. Join me next time when we will present another in the series Vision Scope. Music was provided by Rennie Williams Jr.